Commission conference call today, December the 1st at 4 p.m., and this is a special meeting call. The only issue on our agenda is Columbia River policy. It's the only item we have that we can discuss today. So I guess we have everyone on here except Commissioner Mencken and Kehoe at this time. Is that correct?
Right.
Is that right, Tammy?
Yes, sir. That's what I have. I was waiting to see if they'd answer, but that's what I have as well.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll... there's one.
Yeah.
Hello?
Good afternoon.
Bob.
Hi, Bob.
Hi.
Okay. Like I mentioned previously, we have only one item today that's on the agenda for discussion. Before we start that, Tammy, could you tell us who's on site from the public, the listing?
We have several folks in different offices. I have folks in Spokane, Montesano, Vancouver, and here in headquarters. So I will have all those names in the meeting minutes, but we don't need to go through that right now.
Okay. Fine with that. Okay, we're going to start off by having, I assume we have some staff on board at this point. Do we have Jim Scott or Director Unsworth, Tammy?
I thought we did. Let me run down to their office and see if they're planning to join the call. Hold on one second.
Okay. While we're waiting, initially what is intended here is to get a briefing by the staff of the past, present, and future issues on the Columbia River policy, and then we'll then discuss the shaping options for public review and public comment during the week and in the next week.
While we're waiting, this is Commissioner Thorburn, and I'd just like to take the opportunity to thank the Fish Committee and staff for all the work that you've been putting into this.
Well, the Fish Committee appreciates it, but it's just a small portion of what the staff puts in. We really do appreciate their work. And I'll tell you, my colleagues on the Fish Committee have been doing double duty. It's unfortunately that Commissioner Mencken can't be with us today. I know he's got a long history involved in this, and we sure have appreciated that over the years.
Yep.
Yeah.
Second.
Yeah. Has the director joined?
No, but we really we can't really start without the staff briefing. So
I was there. They told me they were already on the line. So let me run back down there. Hold on.
Hi, this is Jim and staff.
Hi, Director. Who do you have with you, if we may hear?
Yes, I have the fisheries staff, Kyle, Ron, and Jim, and the communications.
Very good. Thank you. Before we start the staff briefing, Jim Scott and I talked this morning, and I was going to take a minute and review our schedule. Do all of you commissioners have the schedule that was sent out electronically in front of you, or do I need to go over it verbally?
We have it.
Yeah,
we have it. I have it.
Yeah. Everyone has it. Are there any questions about those proposed dates or anything?
A lot of work, but appreciate it again.
Okay, hearing none, I guess we'll move on. Director, who's taking the lead on the review, if you will?
Yeah, Mr. Vice Chair, I think Jim Scott's going to start out.
Okay. Yes, hello, Commissioners. This is Jim Scott, and appreciate you taking the time on such short notice to have this conference call. And our intent is to provide some preliminary options to the public so that when they come to the commission meeting a week from Saturday, they will have some specific options that they can comment on. And we see that as a way to make that commission meeting as more productive than it might be if the public didn't have prior notice of some options that were under initial consideration by the commission. Any questions about what the intent is for these options? Okay. So the way we structured these, we had an initial discussion with the Fish Committee to go through some different ways of approaching this task that the commission has in front of it. And the way that seemed to be clearest and provide a good opportunity to engage the public would be to have three options, generally, for commission consideration. And on the sheet that you have in front of you, the options are laid out by species or by and or run timing. The sharing metric is provided at the top of the table, and then the kind of the key points for each option are identified before the below the table there. And so again, the key thing to keep in mind is that these are initial observation options for public review. And at the commission meeting a week from Saturday, then you would have the opportunity to reshape these, if necessary, to solicit additional public comment before the January commission meeting. So at the I'm going to talk kind of at a high level for each of the options then. And again, the interest is to get commission support to move forward with options to distribute to the public, if possible, tomorrow. So Spring Chinook, the three options that we have put forward for your consideration would be to, one, extend the transition period of the current policy, two, to consider the staff proposal that was put forward by Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, or three, to maintain the path that was put forward for the current policy. And the primary differences between those are the sharing between the recreational fishers and the commercial fishers, and whether there would be any options for main stem commercial fishing. So option one, pretty clear, the sharing in the transition period was 70% recreational, 30% commercial. In both the ODF&W staff proposal and our own current policy, that shifts to 80% recreational and 20% commercial. In the transition period, in terms of gear, the tangle net was allowed in the main stem, that's currently, and under the ODF&W staff proposal, there could be main stem non-gill net selective gear net gear after the run update, and the impacts that could be used in that main stem fishery with non-gill net selective gear could be either impacts left over after the off-channel commercial fisheries, or if there were anticipated to be impacts that were not going to be used in the recreational fishery. Option three, the current policy is that there will be tangle net and gill net fisheries only in the off-channel areas, no main stem commercial fisheries for spring Chinook.
I would note under option three that our policy has an inconsistency, and I'm sure I should point the finger at me for failing to clear that up in our first go-round. The main text and what I believe was the intent of the commissioners states that the department will assign 80% of the ESA impact to main stem recreational fisheries to management objectives, and the balance 20% to commercial fisheries for use in off-channel areas. And so the text of the current policy indicates that there will be commercial fisheries only in off-channel areas for spring Chinook. However, Appendix A states that gear other than gillnets could be used in the main stem commercial fishery. And again, I believe that's a mistake on my part in when the initial policy was finalized. So let me pause there and take questions on spring Chinook if you have any.
Jim, this is Dave Graybill, and I might have a comment here. In regard to Oregon's jurisdiction, or most of our discussions with Oregon, they treat the Columbia River from McNary Dam down, okay? That's where the border of the state ends. And so I bring this up during this review of the spring Chinook fishery in that we have responsibilities for escapement above McNary Dam for all species, and particularly spring salmon, where we're having we have spring salmon fisheries on the Yakima River, the Wenatchee River. There's spring salmon fishing on the Snake River. There's additional fisheries that are coming into play. There's also releases now. We should see the first full return of spring salmon to the Colville Tribal Hatchery in Bridgeport this year, too. So escapement above McNary Dam is a concern to Washington, but is not in consideration as much in Oregon. So we need to emphasize that. We have responsibility for escapement of the Columbia River all the way to the Canadian border, where theirs often ends at McNary Dam.
Yes, Commissioner, that's a really important point. The current policy under Spring Chinook, bullet number five, speaks to the sharing of impacts upstream and downstream of Bonneville Dam. And you are accurate and pointing out an important difference in the management considerations that we go through each year. Our management has to look at things above Bonneville and McNary, whereas Oregon typically is most interested in what's occurring below Bonneville.
So this is Commissioner Thorburn. Does that mean then that the impact proportions are calculated differently between the two states? I should say the number, because the proportions are the same, but does that mean that the numbers that are used differ?
No, we've been able to work it out with Oregon so that the there's 25% of the allowable recreational impacts are set aside for above Bonneville Dam, and we've that's the agreed approach that the joint staffs have taken.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Jim, this is Larry Carpenter. I have one question regarding the Oregon option two and the 500,000 smolts. Was there a piece of that on the spring Chinook side? I'm trying to recall. My document doesn't show that.
Sorry, what was the question again, Commissioner?
The ODF&W Option two, I believe I saw the document I have doesn't reflect the half a million smolts that were in the discussion. Was that fit into this box, or is that another area that I've overlooked here?
Again, thank you, Commissioner Carpenter. Yeah, the Oregon proposal also includes some additional production. And you are correct that Oregon proposes to release an additional 500,000 spring Chinook from their Nat Creek hatchery to augment the existing off-channel safe fisheries. We haven't included that in our proposed policy discussion for the Washington Commission, as that would be a Oregon action. But certainly something that we need to consider as we look forward, project forward to the economic impacts.
Yeah, I just brought it up because of the economic benefit to all the fisheries. So thanks for the clarification, Jim.
Mr. Chair, this is Commissioner Keeney.
Yes, Commissioner Keeney, hello.
Hello. I just had a question for clarification. These options or any changes that we might recommend to these options would come to the commission not as a package for all species, but as individual options per species. Is that correct?
Per run.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Per run.
Well, it's all Chinook, Jay, but it's three different subspecies of Chinook, if you will. I guess is that correct, Mr. Scott?
Yes. Thank you, commissioners. The commission could certainly consider mixing and matching any combination of options that you choose from my perspective.
One other quick question. Is it my understanding that fall Chinook are the most complicated and or economically viable for commercial fishermen?
Mr. Carpenter, if I could reply to that.
Please do.
That is correct. And so up till this point, we've talked through the spring Chinook. If there are no more questions on spring Chinook, then I'd like the opportunity to move to the summer Chinook, and then we would move on to the fall Chinook, which probably is the time and species with the greatest interest and concern among the different stakeholders.
Yeah, before you do, Jim, this is Commissioner Smith. In addressing Commissioner Keeney's question, is my understanding correct that the options that are being put forth now are to give the public something to respond to as well?
Yes. Thank you, Commissioner Smith. The idea would be to provide options out to the public tomorrow so that they could come to the commission meeting a week from Saturday and have something specific to comment on. And then at that time, the commission could consider whatever additional direction you would provide for options and collect additional public comment until the January commission meeting.
Okay, thank you.
This is Commissioner Thorburn, and I have one other question. Maybe it's relevant. Do we need to, as we're considering this, do we need to keep, especially economic impacts, in mind litigation from Wild Fish and NOAA's threat regarding Mitchell funding? Do we need to keep this in mind as a possibility of interfering as we make decisions going forward?
This is Jim Scott. If I could respond to that, Chair.
Please do.
Yeah, I think another really good observation. There's a lot of moving parts. Some of them I expect will be resolved within the next month. We've had, I think, very positive discussions with NOAA about the Mitchell Act hatchery consultation. I suspect that we'll have a pretty good feel within the next month about where NOAA will land in terms of what they would consider no jeopardy. The second part, the Wild Fish Conservancy litigation, it is possible that the Wild Fish Conservancy could then initiate litigation against NOAA Fisheries, and it would be anybody's guess, obviously, about how that could play out.
Thank you. That's helpful.
If I could make a suggestion that we get through the summer Chinook piece, let Jim do that, because I think that's a pretty simple one. Then we can get into the meat of this, which is the upriver bright run, I think, that Commissioner Keeney and others may have some interest in.
Okay, I will proceed to summer Chinook. This one's a bit different in that the commissions were previously unable to agree upon the summer Chinook package for 2017 and beyond. So in this case, we have two options for your consideration. Option one would be to extend the transition period of the current policy, and option two is the ODF&W staff proposal. There's, again, two significant differences between those. One, again, is the sharing between the recreational and the commercial fishery. Option one, our current policy has 70% recreational, 30% commercial. And option two, the ODF&W staff proposal, has 80% recreational and 20% commercial. And then second, again, is what gear could be used in what locations. Under the current Washington policy, gill nets are allowed in the main stem. Under the ODF&W staff proposal, the main stem could use, or there could be main stem commercial fisheries with non-gill net selective gear and fishing techniques.
This is Dave Graybill again, just with a comment about summer Chinook. The two departments did not reach agreement on the split between commercial and recreational when the policy was first assembled. And that one of the reasons I believe, and Larry, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but I should clarify that the entire run, except for a small portion that goes to Idaho, I believe, all of the summer runs originate in the upper Columbia River above Priest Rapids Dam. And also, that is also one, that is the primary release of smolt from the Colville Hatchery in Bridgeport. So people understand, all the summer runs originate in the upper Columbia River, and the escapement goals are not being currently met for summer run Chinook in the upper Columbia tributaries. And we expect the first return of summer runs to the Colville Hatchery in Bridgeport this year in 2017.
Basically, to go back 4 years, what Commissioner Graybill is saying is, for all intents and purposes, all those fish are Washington origin fish. Oregon has no production that we're aware of on summer Chinook, and so we have a tough time sharing a lot of those fish with Oregon.
And now there is a tribal component with the Colvilles.
Yeah, Jim, do you want to touch on the difficulties managing those fisheries on the summer run because of the impacts on other species from a commercial perspective and a recreational for that matter?
Yeah, and again, I given you obviously a really high-level summary of these options. At the staff presentation at the commission meeting, we'll be going into obviously a lot more depth on management challenges and the economic consequences of the different choices. But a good point raised by Commissioner Carpenter about the challenges in putting forward alternative gear for summer Chinook. And although the Oregon staff proposal sets aside 20% for commercial fisheries for use in alternative gear, there are no alternative gear that we are currently aware of that could harvest those fish. And that's in part, in large part, due to the presence of sockeye salmon moving through the river simultaneously to the summer Chinook. And so there's we're not currently aware of a alternative gear that would allow us to access the summer Chinook while staying below the impact limits, the very low impact limits on sockeye salmon from the Snake River.
Any questions on that?
Mr. Carpenter, with your permission, then I'd move on to the fall Chinook.
I agree. I just was asking if there's any questions by the commission. Apparently none. Let's move on.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Mr. Vice Chair. This is Commissioner Keogh. So basically we just have two options then to present this summer. We don't have an option three. Is that right?
Yes, Commissioner Keogh. This is Jim Scott. And again, the reason that there is no option three for summer Chinook is that our current policy does not have any direction or guidance on sharing or gear types beginning in 2017. So this is one area where it would be important, if not essential, for the commission to take action to update the policy.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, this is Commissioner Keeney.
Yes, Commissioner Keeney.
From what I just heard previously, and with the very little non-gill set selective gear being possible to be used for the summer Chinook salmon, do we really even have an option two? Is that really a viable option? Or are we really looking at the only option seems viable at this point is one? I'm just curious if I heard that right.
You want to revisit that, Jim, or?
Yeah, certainly.
Or come up with something different, I guess.
Yeah, I think the, if I could, provide a little more explanation on the ODF&W staff proposal. You'll see in the table there's a additional bullet below the sharing and of both the recreational and the commercial. And the important thing to recognize is that there would still be some impacts on summer Chinook occurring in the commercial fishery, even if they weren't fishing in the main stem. There would still be a limited number of impacts occurring in the off-channel areas. So first, that's important to recognize that there would still be that occurring. Now, if there were no alternative gear options for the commercial fishery in the main stem, the ODF&W proposal then says that those unused impacts could be either transferred for use in the recreational fishery upstream of Bonneville Dam or left unharvested to aid spawning escapement. And again, I think some good thinking going on there by the ODF&W staff. As Commissioner Grable stated earlier, on the Washington side, we have a valuable and important recreational fishery occurring in the upper Columbia, middle and upper Columbia. And also, as Commissioner Grable stated, we're not currently meeting spawning escapement goals for our natural natural spawners. So the thought again for the ODF&W was, if we aren't able to find alternative selective gear that the commercial fishery could use, then under this option, it would be those impacts would be passed to escapement or to the recreational fishery above Bonneville.
Thank you.
Okay, Jim, how about Upriver Brights, if there's no other questions?
Okay, Commissioners, I'll move to probably the most challenging of the species and time periods, and that's the Tule Fall Chinooks and the Upriver Bright Chinook salmon. And again, here you'll see there's just two options that we're suggesting the commission consider for distribution to the public. And that is because we believe that the parts of the ODF&W staff proposal that we think are should be considered by the commission are already incorporated either in option one or option two. Now, there is one part of the ODF&W staff proposal that is creating quite a bit of discussion amongst user groups outside of the Columbia River, and that was to set aside 1% of all impacts for use in, with selective gear, and that 1% set aside would be applicable to both ocean fisheries and to Columbia River fisheries. And at least the initial discussions we've had at the staff level, we're suggesting that you not consider within the Columbia River policy actions that might have effects out in the ocean. So again, the two reasons that you don't see an option that would correspond to the ODF&W staff proposal. One is what they have suggested is incorporated either in option one or option two, and the component that isn't included, the 1% set aside, we're not at a staff level recommending that you consider for use in the Columbia River policy. So then, if I could move then to the two options that we're suggesting for your consideration. Again, the primary differences between those are between the sharing and where the different gear types can be used. Extend the transition period of the current policy. 70% recreational, 30% commercial. And the current policy that is in place in Washington would shift that to 80% or up to 80% recreational and less than or equal to 20% commercial beginning in 2017. The gear discussions in the policy, both in the transition period and in the current policy. If we extend the transition period, it provides for gill nets in the off-channel areas. It provides for mainstem commercial fisheries for alternative selective gear, but it also allows the use of gill nets in mainstem fisheries during the transition period if necessary for administrative, biological, or economic reasons. And in addition, though, if those gill net fisheries occur during the transition period, they were restricted to the area above the Lewis River. The current policy for 2017, again, has gill nets in off-channel areas and mainstem commercial fisheries with alternative selective gear. It also has the general provision number 3, however, that again allows gill net fisheries above the Lewis River if necessary to maintain the economic health of the commercial fishery. And I draw your attention to that last sentence in the paragraph there. That's a quote from our current policy. And that quote says, I'm going to go down to the 6th line. It says, because access to upriver Bright Falls Chinook is critically important to ensuring the long-term economic health of commercial fishers, adaptive management will be used to ensure available gear types and techniques are effective, and that commercial fishers continue to have profitable mainstem access to these important stocks. So at least my understanding of the policy and the intent was that our vision is to move to alternative selective gear for the commercial fishery. However, we recognized that the pace of that movement was not entirely predictable when the policy was approved by the commission, and so it provided this leeway under certain circumstances to maintain the gill net fishery above the Lewis River if necessary. I suspect we'll have some questions about that, but I want to go to two other important points that we've talked about at the staff level. That's at the bottom of the page. The existing policy has a guiding principle number 9 that speaks to alternative selective gear. And we're suggesting that the commission consider putting a point on several aspects of that. One, to solicit funding to develop and test alternative selective commercial gear. And two, to provide the commission in December 2017 with a proposed approach for providing incentives to commercial fishers to promote the transition to alternative selective gear. And second, with respect to General Provision 9, which is, speaks about enhancing our fishery management capabilities, I suggest that, again, the Commission might consider providing additional direction to the Department to estimate the bycatch of sturgeon and steelhead in any mainstem gill net fisheries through onboard or other direct monitoring methods. So, Commissioner Carpenter, open to any questions that the commissioners might have on this section.
Sure. What questions do we have out there in the audience?
I have a couple. This is Commissioner Thorburn.
Yes, Commissioner Thorburn.
First of all, do the steelhead runs make the
same fishery at all possible during this period?
This is Jim Scott. And again, certainly there are questions about impacts on steelhead during any seine fisheries conducted in the fall time period. Rather than try and answer that question on the phone right now, my preference would be to devote a good amount of time to it in our presentation on Saturday. I think it's a very important question. Just want to make sure we get a chance to be well prepared for it and have the necessary analysis that you can be looking at the same time.
Thank you. And then my second question is, in the model that the ODFW staff presented, there was a considerable loss to commercial fisheries if we proceeded on the current schedule. And then in their staff recommendation, the adaptive management, that was pretty well corrected. There was much less loss. And was that really dependent on the fall Chinook? It kind of relates to Commissioner Keeney's question. Is it preserving some access to the commercial fisheries on the fall Chinook that makes that huge difference between the loss, the estimated loss to commercial fisheries if we just proceeded on the current schedule and the ODFW adaptive management schedule?
Commissioner Carpenter, could I suggest some responses to...
Yeah, go ahead, and then I'll have a comment when you're done, I think.
Okay. Ken, Mr. Thornburg, you're right on target. Since the time when we were initially considering this policy, it's been recognized that access to the upriver brights is tremendously important to maintaining the commercial fishery. And for that reason, the policy that was adopted by our commission, my belief, it has more flexibility in it than the rules that were adopted by ODF&W. And so you got to recognize there's the approaches taken by the two commissions were very similar, but from my perspective, the Washington Commission worked into the policy more flexibility, perhaps, in the rules that were adopted by Oregon. Two more suggestions for you to consider. I know I've been in contact with Oregon staff this week about their economic analysis. They are in the process of updating that. And certainly we'll be wanting to take a close look at that, and we'll be providing our own Fish and Wildlife Commission with economic analysis at the Saturday presentation.
Great. Thanks. Commissioner
Carpenter? Yes, thank you. I want to talk just a minute. I got two items. I want to talk a minute about alternative gear, and there's other alternative gear ideas out there that, other than the purse seines, the commissioner Finley, the chair of the Oregon Commission, has brought up several thoughts on fish wheels, like were originally used in the Columbia River many, many years ago, perhaps before the era of dams. They're used up on the Yukon River, and they've been used in other rivers around the world. In Japan is another place, and I guess you probably read from the Wild Fish Conservancy their comments about the success of their pound nets. So there's other alternative gear types out there for consideration. I don't know what the economic impacts are on getting information on that to make a decision on it. The one thing I want to tie back a little bit here, Jim, to what you're talking about, I think is important. not necessarily tonight because maybe we're not prepared to do it, but I want to be able to, when we go into our meeting next week, is to be able to tie back, you know, some of the economic goals and modeling that go along with these options that we're talking about, so we can attach some economic perspectives to it going forward.
Mr. Carpenter, this is Jim Scott. If I could respond to that.
Sure, please do.
So one of our altruistic options or altruistic goals in going through these options with you today is to put it so that we could have public engaged in reviewing the options before the commission meeting. The not-so-altruistic value is that if we understand the options that the commission is willing to look at, wants to look at, then we have a chance to do that economic analysis before the commission meeting, and again have a chance to inform the commissioners in more detail about what the different options mean. So beneficial.
Oh, I understand. So you would bring that forward after we get public comment and prior to the January meeting.
Certainly before the January meeting, and to the extent we can, we would also use it to inform discussions in December.
Very good. Thank you, Jim.
This is Commissioner Keeney.
Yeah, Jay.
Yeah, along those same lines, I guess, when I read Option 2 current policies for 2017, as they talk about a presumptive path forward regarding targeted commercial harvest, and that presumptive path isn't working for whatever reason. I'm reading some of the statistics, you know, and I asked for some of these, I think, to be brought forward so we could understand this better. I think our number one goal is the resource. Our second goal right behind it is the commercial and recreational economies. If what we presume to be true is affecting the commercial economy, I think it's not a them or us kind of a situation, is we have to look at different approaches. And as I read, post-seine release mortality of unclipped fish is extremely high. Is that even really an alternative anymore unless we have data that shows that to be untrue? And I think I asked for this at the November meeting that we and there was a need for an additional study. But knowing what gillnet fishing has as a post-release mortality for non-targeted species, as well as some of these alternatives, is critical. Being able to say we can create a different policy from what we viewed if that's not working. We have to know first if it's working before we create a different alternative, I think. And I'd just like to, you know, say that the idea of gillnet fishing isn't clearly defined in Option 2 current policy for 2017. You have to read it, and you have to guess at it, and it was explained just now that, you know, that could allow a different approach if our presumptive path wasn't being met. But, you know, when we get around to making this, I think it has to be crystal clear what we're saying, and that needs to be based on the best science we have, the best studies we have, on all aspects of this fishery. So, and the economy is key to it. So if we're putting people out of business based on a presumption that we could find alternative gear and that's not working, we really have to look at that hard.
Well, Jay, let me add here two things. That's why we plugged in adaptive management, because nobody had a crystal ball or a template. Unfortunately, I'm the only one on the call that was involved in this 4 years ago. I wish that Commissioner Mencken was. But I can tell you categorically, I have never been involved in a more thorough, more dedicated, more committed process amongst all the commissioners on both sides of the river and the stakeholders to try and come up with a policy that worked. You know, did we hit it totally out of the park? I don't know, but I'll tell you, it was not for lack of effort. So, you know, we've got some things to look at. But keep in mind, and I don't want to dwell on this right now, but we're trying to come up with a formula that works for everybody, and we're not intending to put anybody out of business. That was never the plan.
Oh, I appreciate all the work that went into this, totally. We are where we are today, though. because of maybe of all the unknowns, maybe because of things that we didn't have figured out. Just these were presumptive path forwards, and adaptive management was the key word. So I guess I'm just saying we shouldn't be afraid to use adaptive management. It's part of this plan. We're not selling out. We're not going against an agreement. I mean, it's part of the agreement. Adapt as needed based on science and the reality of the situation.
I think we can get that done.
Well said, Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, this is Jim. I wanted to make sure. I talked to Commissioner Thorburn the other day, and she requested of me that I ask the Fish Bureau to make sure that we presented the economic information based on the individual stocks. And so do I need more clarification than that, Commissioner?
No, that would be really helpful to me. Thank you.
Mr. Vice Chair, Commissioner Wecker.
Mr. Wecker.
That kind of jogged my memory that when we developed this overall reform package, we also were looking at COHO and the economics of the harvest, as I recall. So,
late-run COHO is what I think you're referring to.
Yeah. So where is that? Is there any changes being proposed or any consideration being given to how the seasons performed in terms of supplying the commercial fishery with sufficient harvest opportunity?
Jim, do you have that at hand?
Yes, thank you, Commissioner Carpenter and Commissioner Wecker. Our presentation will certainly include COHO because it is particularly important for the commercial fishery. However, we're not aware of any suggestions from the ODF&W staff or others to deviate from the current policy direction for COHO. So we have not highlighted it in the options that we put forward for your consideration.
Okay. And were you planning on presenting to us what the baseline essentially was for the commercial fisheries economic activity at the time? Because it's always very challenging to think in terms of what we can guarantee in terms of economic activity. It's something that I've been struggling with, maybe uncomfortable with for years, is that how can we, in this age of having more and more responsibility for protecting listed species, for balancing activity with the tribes, it's just very difficult to guarantee a certain return on investment for commercial fisheries. So are we going to hear that information too about, you know, where we came up with the numbers back 5 years ago and what they were, what's expected now?
Chair Carpenter, could I address Commissioner Wecker's question?
Please do, Jim.
Again, very good observations and questions from the commissioners. And yes, Commissioner Wecker, we were intending to pull out the economic analysis that was done in the consideration of the previous policy. My belief is that the commission has not, up till this time, made any guarantees about the economic benefits to commercial fishers or recreational fishers. Certainly, there's a very deep and broad consideration, though, of the economic impacts. And again, we intend to bring that forward in both December and certainly January.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions, Jim?
This is Dave Graybill, and just a comment again to share the concerns of Commissioner Wecker is we have to be so careful, I think, in addressing the issue of economics, because I think I hear her saying, and I am very uncomfortable with the concept of through fish management guaranteeing an income for not only a commercial fisher, but a guide or outfitter or lodge that's a recreational based fishery. It's going to be very interesting how we deal with that concept of guaranteeing an economic benefit when we manage these fisheries for the public. Just a comment.
This is Commissioner Keeney.
Commissioner Keeney?
I think maybe one thing to think about as I wrestle with what was just said, and it is a dilemma, but it's the types of gear that we're asking commercial fishermen to test and or transfer to and or set up to use, I think has some economy differences of scale built in. You know, and talking with some of those folks, when you have to use two boats versus one because you switch to a seine fishery, or you have to have four people on board rather than two, I think that's maybe more what we should be thinking about and comparing, not the bottom line out the other end, but because that's going to vary based on each year and each run. But, you know, is what we're asking them to do economically feasible? I think we might be able to get our handle on that better than just the overall economic status of individual commercial fishermen. And the other thing I think is still might come into play is, you know, when we looked at this back in 2012, gill netting seemed to be the one practice that most people felt could not be done selectively. And yet I've heard from several folks that done correctly, there is possibilities where you can manage that type of a fishery in a way that would have less possibly mortality than other methods. But I can't imagine that wasn't looked at some point by observers on a variety of commercial boats, and I would still like to understand or see any type of database that would show what all those observations came up with over the years.
Commissioner Keeney, I know that if Connie Mankin was on the line, that's one thing he's asked about a number of times, so I think we can get to that. But I just want to say, from historical perspectives, none of our constituents are going to be fishing for salmon in any meaningful way in the future if we can't fish selectively. I mean, that's commercial, recreational. It's that's where it's going. NOAA's making us do it. Recreational is a little simpler because you can fish with barbless hooks and so on. But that's where we have to go, and so we got to get our hands around that issue, whether we like it or not.
I agree. I'm just asking, is there a way that gill netting can be done by experienced people with knowledge of the river systems and knowledge of the fisheries and how they move through it in a selective enough manner that it might beat some of the alternatives we're talking about? I just want to know that, if that's true or false. And it may be false, but I think it needs to be revisited.
You and I will sit down and have a Pepsi over that. I did that for a lot of years, so I have some insight. I'll be happy to share it with you. And others would too, I'm sure. Any other questions? Jim, do you have any closing comments? It's 5 o'clock.
Well, no, I first again want to thank the commissioners for engaging late on a Thursday. A lot of very good questions, and certainly has helped me think about what staff will need to present a week from Saturday. And again, the ask at the staff level would you be supportive of putting these initial options out for public comment, and then additional analyses will certainly occur with the potential modification at the commission meeting.
If I may ask a question, do any of the commissioners disagree with putting these options out for public review? Hearing none, we'll assume that's a go, Jim.
Thank you.
Yeah, Commissioner Chair or Vice Chair Carpenter, Craig, do you have any questions? Craig Bartlett's here with us, and he's going to do the news release. So
I'm with Public Affairs. I think the only—I mean, I've talked to everybody here about this, I think, so far. But the only question we had in Public Affairs is that whether to how specifically to mention the Ease and Gill matters off the main stem, Columbia. I mean, that's what the news media know this issue to be about. And I think I just have talked about restructuring the main stem fishery at this point.
Well, I don't know how to comment on that. I guess the director is going to have to tell you that. I mean, we all know how this all started 4 years ago, and it's been a long path, you know, until we get to where we are. But I don't know. Jim, I don't know if it's appropriate for us to write the press release, is it?
No, that's not what I wanted. Just wanted to touch bases with Craig and see if he had any final questions for folks.
No,
so.
I'm good.
No. All right, any other comments by staff or commissioners? Hearing none, it's now 5:02 on December 1st. We'll call this meeting, adjourn this meeting. Thank you, and all have a good evening.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye.